It's 10:35 Newfoundland Standard Time. Stay tuned for The Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine, with Paul Moth. You are listening to the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, 520 on the long wave. This week on The Great Eastern.
The pamphlet is called Terror is a Tool.
No defections were British through and through.
Newfoundland was a cool place then, Paul.
Are getting painfully high.
It's a great day to be a townie. God bless St. John. God bless us everyone.
Good morning, Newfoundland and peoples of Canada. Welcome aboard the Great Eastern. On today's show, a king's ransom discovered in the vault. Tobacco for a better tomorrow. Baymen have their say. Another BCN show goes national. And throughout today's program, the St. John's Regatta. Highlights of my day at the races. This and so much more for you on the Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine. What a week for the sports fan here in St. John's. Women's World Softball Championships, the World Cup of Lawn Darts, and the greatest tradition of them all, the races. I was there, pondside, at the crack of dawn last Wednesday.
I'm here in the cupola of the boathouse beside scenic Kittyvitty Lake, awaiting the decision on the start of the 168th Royal St. John's Regatta, the longest, continuously running sporting event in the Americas. Will the racers and the pondside bash, both steeped in tradition, go ahead today? Members of the August St. John's Regatta Committee have been poring over weather charts for hours now, trying to decode the mysterious jumble of figures and symbols that is meteorology in Newfoundland. The results are inconclusive, so the committee has resorted to the age-old beetle board. What a sight they are in their tall hats, chanting, waiting to see to which section of the board the bug crawls. I don't know if any member of the media has ever witnessed this before. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
The races are on! The races are on! And here comes our own J.R. Kandel, a veteran member of the Regatta Committee, J. Richard.
Boss, how much did you see?
Have you ever gone to the Beagle before, J.R.?
It's happened 12 times in the history of the Regatta, Paul. I'll take that later. But never once has the Beagle been wrong, but this is the first occasion in my 11 years on the committee that I've had the privilege of looking the bug, as we say.
Are you excited?
Paul, it's a great day for the East End. It's a great day to be a townie. God bless St. John's. God bless us, everyone.
Overcome with emotion and straining under the pressure of making such a critical decision and drunk at such an early hour of the day, it's no wonder and no surprise to see a hard man like J. Richard Kandel weep. I'm proud to have been an eyewitness. But you know, it's just the beginning of a day at the races. And we'll have more from the regatta later.
Say it when you're ready.
Our letter of the week comes from Bay Roberts, and there's smoke rising off it. Roxanne Mercer writes, Dear Mr. Moth and associates of the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, having listened for some time now to your show, I would like to take this moment to pronounce it a colossal fraud. You claim to be Newfoundland's cultural magazine, but the Great Eastern is nothing but a shameless celebration of St. John's culture in all its arrogant, town-centric, faded glory. It has nothing to do with the culture of Bay people or that of other rural Newfoundlanders or Labradorians, except insofar as you indulge in slurs and insults. I might make particular reference to J. Richard Kandow, not only a chronic windbag, but a spent piece of political rubbish and a discredited swindler, who seems to take great delight in his bigoted, townist assaults on all that is decent, sincere, and true about the people who are the heart and soul of Newfoundland. This sort of disrespect is something we've come to expect from the Canadian broadcaster, endlessly fascinated with goofy-noofy stories even as they pack up the shop everywhere but St. John's. But when it comes from the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, our own public station, it is simply unacceptable. We won't be buying your snake oil anymore. Even as a copy of this letter makes its way toward the desk of the Minister of Culture, a petition is circulating around Conception Bay demanding that your show be taken off the air. Yours sincerely, Roxanne Mercer. Wow. Well, Roxanne, strong sentiments indeed. Well, I can't speak for J. Richard, but, you know, for myself, all I can say is that I really try hard to give fair representation to the people from around the bay and from rural Newfoundland and from Labrador. To be perfectly honest, it's not easy on the shoestring budget we have here at the Great Eastern, but we do give it our best. I'm truly sorry you feel the way you do, and I hope it's not a feeling that's as widely shared as you seem to think it is. And I appeal to all residents of Conception Bay, please do not sign this petition. Perhaps you would like to write a letter directly to J. Richard Kandow at 419 Javelin Crescent, St. John's, A1L7B4.
Serving the island for over 60 years, BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland.
One of my favorite places to be on the show is In the Vault, our weekly-ish visit to the BCN archives, where Director of Radio Ish Lundgren awaits us with his unfathomable knowledge of the history of this great station. Ish, hello again.
Thank you, Paul, and welcome to the Vault.
What do you have for us this week?
Well, this week, Paul, I'm going to resurrect the most popular quiz show that ever aired on BCN.
Really? I didn't know they did quiz shows out of here.
Oh, yes, yes, King's Ransom, it's called. It came on the air in the second year of the Commission of Government, in the darkest days of the Depression.
Ish, perhaps a short explanation?
Well, Newfoundland went bust in 1933. The government dissolved itself, and the British appointed a commission to rule us and to make sure that the British and Canadian loans were repaid.
Hard times. Why was a game show so popular in the face of such grim reality?
Well, they offered a huge cash money prize for the time, $200 Newfoundland.
How much was that worth?
$200.
No, I mean...
But it was never won. See, every week they added another $5 to the jackpot. So that by the time the show went off the air, the prize was worth nearly $2,000.
Wow, exciting.
Now, don't get your hopes up too high. It wasn't fancy like the shows you get now on TV with the magic wheels and the healthy young models and so on. No, it was just your basic general knowledge show.
But the jackpot was never claimed.
The rules were very strict and very complicated. But people enjoyed the challenge. And, of course, the listeners took great pleasure in the fact that the contestants never won. True Newfoundland spirit there, Paul, hey? Anyway, they recorded these shows live in the ballroom at the Newfoundland Hotel.
BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, serving the proud Crown Colony for nearly 5 years.
That's what they called us during the commission years.
King's Ransom, brought to you by the Harvey Trading Company, general shippers and suppliers of fine products to Newfoundland families. And now, the host of A King's Ransom, Caspar Cundy!
Good evening, Newfoundland. Once again tonight, we've got a King's Ransom to give away. Our jackpot this week, Bill Lutton.
The King's Ransom this week is... $1,045!
Ooh, the stakes are getting painfully high. And now we welcome this week's contestants. First, from Cape Royal, Mercy Hayden.
Hello.
Your buzzer, please. Thank you. And our next contestant is Basil Cubes from Goobies.
Hello, Casper.
Buzz, please, Baz. And last but not least, our regular contestant, Clyde the Clown. And as you all know, the rules for a king's ransom are as follows. Firstly, all answers must be given in Latin unless the question requires a number
Clyde
as
the Clown?
An answer.
It was a comedy quiz show. It was a bit controversial, of course, that one of the contestants was, for all intents and purposes, an employee of BCN.
You mean the fix was in?
Well, that was never proven. But people got very suspicious. I mean, if Clyde wasn't the finalist on the show, the question was usually unbelievably difficult.
You say that the show really was crooked?
Well, it was. It was just another money-making scheme by the commission government.
How so?
Well, see, anyone who wanted to be a contestant on the show had to send in 6 cents with their entry form. And as the show was very popular, and you could send in as many entry forms as you wanted, well, it was very lucrative. But there was never any intention to pay out the jackpot. Sure, it wasn't $2,000 in Newfoundland at the time.
Well, that's shocking.
Yes, well, there was a lot of bad feeling about it at the station because, of course, everybody knew. But they were under strict orders.
Joe earns an opportunity to win a king's ransom. All ready? Good. The first question, as usual, goes to Clyde the Clown. No, Clyde, no. You cannot do Latin pantomime.
Oh, I'm after telling you, Mr. Cumby, you're a blackguard, you are.
Very, very funny, Clyde. Now, your question. Who saved the Cape Colony from the clutches of the Dutch? Only 3 seconds left.
Cecil Rhodes.
Quite you are. Quick off the back today, Clyde. Now, mercy. For an armload of points. Your first question. How deep is Lake Victoria? No? Basil, how about you?
Is the answer 235 feet?
Oh, that is so close. Judges, can we take 235 feet as a correct answer? The judge's decision is final and... No, Basil, no. Sorry. The correct answer is...
Now let's just go to the end and I'll show you what I mean.
No, I am sorry, Basil. The hero who saved Ireland at the Battle of the Boyne was Oliver Cromwell.
You're sorry. How do you think the Irish feel?
And the horn from the Great Eastern tells us that the contest is over for today. Clyde the Clown, not a very good showing, Clyde. Half a kentel of cod points for you. Basil Cubes from Goobies, 2.5 kentels. And having scored a yaffle of points in the Royal History section, the winner on a King's Ransom today is Mercy Hayden from Cape Florida. Now, Mercy, for the jackpot, a King's Ransom of $1,045, all you have to do is answer this question. Are you ready?
Yes.
Mercy, you could be the very first person in 169 weeks to claim our jackpot. The pressure is tremendous. Here is the question that could win you a king's ransom. Mercy, between 1883 and 1887, Lord Marlborough of Kent was the governor of what British colony? Lord Marlborough of Kent. Be careful now. Not Lord Marlborough of Cheshire.
British Protectorate of Ugubamba?
That is right! And now, for the second part of that question. 53 British thermal units is to grouse hunting as Sydney, Australia is to what famous star of the London stage? 53 BTUs to grouse hunting as Sydney is to what star? Mercy?
Dame Edith Wesley?
Mercy?
Yes?
No! Another $5 goes into the jackpot, now worth a staggering $1,050. All contestants on a King's Ransom receive a box of dry goods from the Harvey Trading Company. I am Casper Cumby. Join me again next Thursday when we have two new contestants to do battle for a King's Ransom.
I can't believe that. The second part of the question? That's so cruel.
Newfoundland was a cruel place then, Pa.
No one ever caught on.
Well, there was a good deal of talk, but the scandal never really broke. The problem was Clyde. He was a drinker, you know, loose lips. The government sent him off to Barbados on a molasses boat, and we never heard from him again.
Leak plugged.
Exactly. And the show was then taken off the air when war broke out in 1939 without the jackpot ever being won.
Wow. a king's ransom. Well, another corner of Newfoundland broadcasting history that's had the light of Ish Lundgren cast upon it. Thanks for this, Ish, and we'll see you again next week.
In the vault.
You're listening to The Great Eastern on the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland with your host, Paul Moth.
No WordWorks feature this week, folks, but fans of Kathleen Hanrahan needn't be disappointed because I've caught up with everyone's favorite litwit right here at the regatta. There are games of chance, wheels of fortune, crown and anchor, rip-off ring toss. These things have always been a big part of the carnival that is the St. John's Regatta.
Only a couple of dollars holding up the wheel, folks. Step right up. 50 cents, three for a dollar.
I'll take three, Kathleen.
Oh, trying your luck, eh, Paul?
I don't believe in luck anymore, Kathleen. The cash prizes are always popular pond side and stuffed animals, of course, but you people with the Literacy Association are offering something different this year.
That's right, Paul. Only fitting that we should offer books for prizes, don't you think?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting idea.
Step right up. Help the Literacy Association. Step right up. Try your luck.
I'll take another dollar's worth, Kathleen. Get this action moving here.
Oh, not just books, Paul, but books by Canadian authors.
Whoa. Hey, surprising then that you weren't drawing a bigger crowd.
50 cents, three for a dollar. You, sir, step right up. Try your luck. Help the Literacy Association. Step right up.
Okay, why not? Give me another dollar's worth.
Hey, big spender. Great Canadian titles, too. An illustrated history of poutine.
The illustrations are vivid, to be sure. Talk about your Société d'Estaing.
Susan Musgrave's Love Poems to Peter.
Pass.
Alperno Duro's selection of introductory essays from his previous collection of erotic anthologies.
Riveting, I'll bet.
Uh-huh. There's also Conrad Black's Jaw Love.
I actually read that, you know. It was great. Who would have ever thought?
Who would have thought? A complete conversion to Rastafarianism, hey?
And Barbara O'Neill, too.
Oh, I like the dreadlocks on her, Paul, but I really think Conrad looked ridiculous.
Ever see pictures of me in the 70s? Whoa.
Step right up. Try your luck.
God, look at the time. Come on, Kathleen.
Oh, it's a bit slow now, but I'm sure it'll pick up. Three for a dollar, folks. Step right up. You, sir. Sir, you over there, sir, with the hat. Three for a dollar.
I wonder sometimes, Kathleen, how relevant this literacy stuff is. Don't get me wrong now. Naturally, I'm all for literacy, but what holds me up these days is, you know, well, the computer stuff for one, and I'll be damned if I can operate the latest telephone.
Sure. I mean, the computers, phone literacy, that's all important.
And copiers, some of those new photocopiers are wicked.
But, Paul, it's my deepest conviction that the written word is the very foundation of civilization itself. Paul, nothing is more important than books.
I guess. All the same, desert island scenario, you can have the copy of Robinson Crusoe. I'll take the water and spam.
50 cents, three for a dollar. Can't win if you don't spin. Everybody's the winner on the Literacy Association wheel.
I'm going to spin the wheel.
Just
forget
right
our next.
Three for a dollar. Just a couple of dollars.
Okay. Give me another dollar.
Here you go, sir.
Thank you very much.
And look at your tickets, folks. Here we go. And the wheel is going round and round and round. And where she stopped? Here she stopped. And the lucky number is...
One, two,
112. The lucky winner of the latest spin from the Literacy Association.
Okay, over here.
And the winner is none other than radio personality Paul Moth. Well, Paul, what's your pleasure?
I suppose it has to be a book, does it?
Well, yes.
All right, then. Give me a copy of The Rocky Road Recovery.
You're going to take a copy of your own book?
Well, he got 5 copies from the publisher, and, you know, I thought it'd make lovely Christmas gifts. Anyway, Kathleen, good luck for the rest of the day. Thanks for the book. I gotta get back to the boathouse now, and I'll see the BCN crew before the big media race.
Had an uncle living in Detroit town. They got all every day, yeah. Every day, yeah. Every day, yeah. Every day, yeah. Every day, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Penelope by the Hines brothers, Sean and Chris. They're back in St. John's working on a new album. Since the Great Eastern has gone Canadian this summer, we've had a number of letters inquiring about other programs originating here at the BCN. Most people seem curious about Interred with Morris Jesso. This comes as no surprise to us here at the BCN. Interred has been a phenomenal success ever since it went on the air in 1971. I visited Morris Jesso in storied Studio E this Tuesday, where our own Tom Codner was putting the finishing touches on this week's Interred.
Oh, hi, Paul.
How are you, Tom?
Just a second. We're finishing up the show.
Oh, my. She does look lovely. Almost alluring. The finest quality work, to be sure.
Thank you, Morris.
And thank you, Harold O'Driscoll, for showing us around this wonderful new facility and discussing some of your new environmentally friendly techniques. There is that familiar music once again, bringing another Interred to a close. I hope we have been a bridge over your troubled waters today. I'm Morris Jesso, inviting you to join me next Sunday on Interred here on the BCN.
Nice show, Morris.
Well, Tom, as always, thank you so much. What was that, Paul Ma? Tell him to come right in the studio, Tom. Come on.
Good morning, Morris.
Good morning, Paul. You are looking well. Would you join me for some tea? A biscuit, perhaps? They are lovely.
Thank you. It's a peaceful studio you have here, Morris. I really like the velvet and stuff. Gives it a real serene atmosphere.
Thank you. You like your tea with a lot of sugar, is that correct?
Yes, you remembered. Morris, Interred is perhaps the most popular show that
perhaps.
BCN... Well, is the most popular show that the BCN has
ever... Do you find it surprising?
Frankly, yes.
Well... Like so many things in life, a mystery.
So popular, in fact, that word in the building is that Interred is going national this fall.
Indeed, people do talk. But, yes, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has a program. It's weekday mornings. Embarrassing for me, but the name of the program escapes me at the moment. But, yes, I'll appear every Thursday in the last 20 minutes.
Are you going to be changing the format for the national audience at all?
Naturally, we will not be able to do our weekly roundup of the recently departed. The country's just too big for that kind of thing. We will concentrate on celebrities, deaths of note, curiosities.
Curiosities?
Oh, I've seen a few of those over the years, let me tell you.
Well, like what, for example, Morris?
Oh, stuffings, you know, taxidermy.
Wow.
Someone being fed to their favorite pet. I saw a man put to his final rest in his Corvette. And I hope to have my remains sent into outer space.
Well, the beats cryogenics, anyway.
And more final, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Morris, why this obsession with something that's so, well...
Do you find it morbid?
Yeah, I guess that's it. I do, yeah.
Well, death is the real attention-getter.
Mm-hmm.
Last hurrah.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lovely way to get old friends together.
True.
And you know, Paul, in this world of inequities, death is the one common bond. It's the one experience we will all share. It is inevitable.
But you seem to glory in it, Morris.
I enjoy my work.
You
I
have,
do.
You have your detractors, of course, and you know that.
Mm-hmm.
People who say that the program is, I don't know, ghoulish, that kind of thing.
Well, Paul, I can only surmise these people cannot accept their own mortality and that they are not at peace with themselves. You know, we always endeavor to keep everything in good taste.
Well, of course you do, and you succeed. And there's no denying the appeal of the program either. Interred seems to have a life of its own, if you will.
When not for its passing on the BCN, Paul, for all good things must come to an end.
As do all good interviews. Morris Gesso, congratulations and continued success with Interred. I feel sure that the national audience will take to you as has the Newfoundland audience.
You are so kind, Paul. Bless you.
The Great Eastern. Great radio. Coast to coast in Newfoundland. On the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland, BCN. 520 on the long wave.
Now our weekly What's That Noise from Newfoundland contest, and this particular noise has proven to be quite baffling. This is the fifth straight week now, and we still haven't had a correct answer. So come on, you guys, put on the thinking caps. Here's the noise from Newfoundland. Give her a spin, Tommy Gardner. Know what that is? Well, if you do, and we draw your entry correctly identifying that noise from Newfoundland, we'll send you a handsome gift item from the BCN boutique. Well, I'll pull a letter at random from our burgeoning mail sack on the floor. It used to be up on the table, but since we've gone national, I can't get the bag up anymore. And this envelope is postmarked Ramia, Newfoundland, and it's from Peter Hamilton of Ramia. And Peter writes, "Dear Paul, I think it sounds like the Newfoundland economy." Well, hardy har, Peter. I'm going to draw another letter. This is a serious contest, folks. Okay, back into the happy mail sack. Out comes another envelope, and it's postmarked Prince Rupert, B.C. Our first entry from beautiful British Columbia. And it's from Steve Caravan in Prince Rupert. Hello, Steve, from all of us in St. John's. And it says, "Dear..." I'm not going to read this. Oh, there's some sick people out there. Third time's lucky, they say. Back into the mailbag. This one comes all the way from Bull Arm, Newfoundland, site of the massive Hibernia boondoggle. Woo. And it's from Reginald Wilkinson, and it says, "Dear Paul, I listen to the show regularly. You certainly have a unique view of Newfoundland, both past and present. I feel that I blah, blah, blah." He goes on at great length about who and what he is. It's three pages, really. It's a like a resume. Okay, here we go. "And therefore, permit me without any doubt to recognize that noise from Newfoundland as a wall in the gravity-based system collapsing." The gravity-based system, for those of you who don't know, is a floating concrete platform, if you can figure that one out. "But I'm sorry, Reggie, you are a loser. It is not the sound of the GBS disintegrating. So, if you think you know what this noise from Newfoundland is, why don't you drop us a line at the Great Eastern, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland. Our postal code is A1C1H5. I'm back at the boathouse now, and the crews are all getting ready for the media race. The shells are out, and some of the crews are in the shells. The Evening Telegraph, they've already boarded, the Colonist 3. Obviously, of particular interest to me, as I've wagered 50 big ones with my barber, are our own boys in the BCN blue. But they don't seem to have arrived yet, and it's getting near race time. Let's talk with some of the strapping young fellows in the CBC squad who have, in the interest of aerodynamics, shaved all the hair off their gigantic, deformed frames. Hi, guys. Just tell me who you are.
I'm Bob.
Bob from the CBC. What do you do over at the big broadcaster, Bob?
I'm a rower.
Yeah, no, I mean, what do you do while you're at the CBC working?
Well, stockroom.
Jeez, Bob, you're a big boy. I guess you must get to lift a lot of boxes over there in the stockroom, eh?
What do you mean?
It's
just a joke, Bob. Oh, look, here comes the Cox of the CBC crew, Kevin Heydrich. Kevin, can we have a word with you?
Hey. Leave these athletes alone. What did he give you, Bob?
Nothing.
What are you giving these boys?
Nothing. I was just talking to him.
Clear up, Marches. Clear up. Get out of here.
Look, Kevin, I'm an accredited journalist here.
Not on this side of the pond, you're not.
Well, here they come now, folks. The boys of the BCN. And here's Earl James from marketing. You guys don't look so great. Here's the veteran in the boat, Bill Robbins, from the mailroom. Game day jitters, I guess. But these guys are so nervous. And you shouldn't have eaten before the race, you know, boys. We're almost ready for the lads to get into the Miss BCN. I can see by the traditional distribution of the bottles that it's time for the urine sample. We'd best leave these lads to it. But what athletes, ladies and gentlemen. The ability to urinate in front of other men. It's always... I think Earl needs another bottle over here. I think Earl's going to need another bottle real soon. Boys, best of luck, and go for the gold.
Coast to coast in Newfoundland, you're listening to BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland.
It's a pleasure to welcome back to the Great Eastern our distinguished panel on political culture in Newfoundland. With me in the studio are Ariel Flint, host of BCN Show Trial.
Hi, Paul.
And J. Richard Kandow, noted pundit, pollster, and, of course, member of the St. John's Regatta Committee.
Royal St. John's Regatta Committee, Paul.
Some controversy surrounding a couple of the races down at the pond.
There's a small matter which is before the court, so my counsel has advised that I not comment.
Oh, and of course, joining us on the phone this week, hello, from Portobasque is Carl Johnson, Valdmanis Professor of Political Economy at the University of Newfoundland at St. John's. Still on the road, hey, Carl?
Yes, there's a conference on pulp and paper.
All work and no play, Carl. The first topic today, then. The Newfoundland government has just legislated the Smoke-Free Tobacco Act. Stiff new rules about smoking in public. Not at all in retail locations or public buildings, and restaurants and even bars must maintain no smoking areas. What do we think?
Well, now, what I'm going to say about this issue has nothing, absolutely nothing, to do with the fact that I'm a two-pack-a-day man, but...
He must be referring to cigarettes.
Well, Ariel's one of these rights advocates, so I'm sure that she'll agree that what I do with my body is my business.
Oh, I shudder to think. Richard, there's no problem with you having a smoke. My problem is with where you have it. There's irrefutable evidence that secondhand smoke is a serious hazard.
I refute this evidence. I could point to study after study that show that cigarettes can improve the complexion, and certainly they help adolescents with the development of social skills.
We're talking about substances that kill, Richard. If you want to kill yourself, go right ahead. But it's homicide when you kill me.
Oh, there are quicker and more sure ways of getting rid of you, Miss Flint. If secondhand smoke bothers you, move! No one's asking you to hang around getting a nicotine freebie off my butt.
Are you actually denying that cigarettes are deadly drugs, Richard?
It's not that simple. And even if, hypothetically, cigarettes were in any way at all harmful, that still doesn't give you the right to restrict what I put into my system.
Oh, I see. Now we're getting somewhere. So, you're in favor of legalizing other drugs?
No.
Marijuana? No. Cocaine?
Those are totally different.
Oh, yeah? Why's that?
Because they are illegal.
But the government says that these new smoking regulations are for the public good, for public health.
Exactly. And therein lies the danger. Where will it stop, I wonder? Government concern with the public good is the first step to tyranny.
The historical origins of state involvement.
State involvement? Key words. All our freedoms are being eroded. We've driven the Reds out of Eastern Europe, and I think it's time we took a good look at the Department of Health.
Richard, aren't you a paid lobbyist for the cigarette companies?
There is absolutely no direct connection between Tobacco for a Better Tomorrow and the cigarette companies. And I don't know that my work with a registered charity is at issue here. Next topic, please, Paul.
All right, then. How about the internal document from Revenue Canada that was leaked to the press this week?
Yes. Paul, this document reveals very clearly that the mentality of these people has become more that of loan sharks than civil servants.
Oh, tough talk for tax deadbeats. What is your problem?
The pamphlet is called Terror is a Tool.
Terror is a tool?
A manual of intimidation tactics.
Intimidation or motivation? In any case, the document was for internal use only. Before access to information, this never would have been a problem. I mean, I've said this before. There are some aspects of government that are best veiled in secrecy.
Yeah, right. What we don't know won't hurt us?
Oh, that's very good. Did you just make that up, Ariel? Revenue Canada has a right, indeed an obligation, to convince the ordinary citizen, the salaried worker, that it would be a good idea to pay up.
Paul, listen to this. I'm quoting directly from the pamphlet. Excuse. Can't get blood from a turnip. Suggested response, no, but you can throw the turnip in jail.
Paul, that's the only kind of language some of these people understand.
I got no money, you got a house, is no way to deal with people in hard straits.
Well, Bill, 9-3-6.
Why is everybody in such an uproar? Have you ever heard of a tax loophole, tax lawyers, child tax credits, tax accountants, tax shelters? Fair share of taxes, indeed.
It should be said that Citizen Kandow has been in court with Revenue Canada for years.
Well, endless legal wrangling is one of the many legitimate avenues of tax avoidance open to anyone who can pay them in. Rights, baby, rights.
Let me get this straight. You think it's fine for Revenue Canada to terrorize people who genuinely cannot pay their taxes, mm-hmm. while it's right and proper that you and your cronies can employ every method to pay as little tax as possible.
Well, I'm glad I'm finally getting through to you.
The working poor and the middle class should be carrying the country while the rich get off cheap.
It only makes sense. The middle class is huge, while there are hardly any rich people at all.
That used to be.
This kind of thing holds especially true in a desperate spot like Newfoundland, where the majority of the people are very poor indeed.
You want to increase taxes on the poor, Richard?
Well, somebody has to pay. Really, Ariel, you are so naive.
Okay, all right, everybody, back into your neutral corners, because that's all the time we have, our roundup of political culture for this week. Thank you, panel.
Care for a cigarette, Ariel?
Oh, I won't be provoked.
I understand that Richard and Ariel are off on junkets this week.
Well, yes, I have some meetings in the Cayman Islands where every day is a bank holiday.
And Ariel?
Well, Paul, actually, I've postponed my holidays. I'll be doing a documentary piece on the alleged urine swap at the regatta.
Carla, will we be seeing you again or what?
I'll be researching at the National Archives in Ottawa.
Ah, well, give my regards to Frank Morris should you run into him there, Carl.
Well, great. I understand that we'll all be together again next week, and we'll see you all then.
Goodbye,
Bye, Paul.
Bye, Paul.
Opinions expressed by our panelists are not necessarily those of the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland.
The International Softball Federation's 8th Women's World Fast Pitch Championship is being held this week in St. John's. They're all here, from Botswana to Croatia, from Taipei to Argentina, fighting it out for a chance to go for the gold at the 1996 Olympics. Now, I gotta say, I wasn't sure about fast pitch when I went on this assignment. I mean, I've always thought that there's something, I don't know, underhanded about softball. The ball is so big. Then I caught up with the team representing Great Britain. The concept was that I soften up the opposition a bit by exchanging pleasantries with the players before stepping in for a few swings, flex my .264 lifetime batting average. I played some baseball in my youth, you know. But first, the introductions.
Anne Murphy. I'm from Liverpool. I used to play netball with a girl who was playing softball, and I used to go down with her to watch and wait for her and then go to netball afterwards, and then in the end they were just saying, come on, have a go.
I'm Anne's sister,
mm-hmm.
and I was playing the sport for about 3 years before Anne, and she could see me going to other countries and having a good time, and she thought, well, I'm going to have a go at that. In Europe, it's a big sport. It's like in the curriculum and that. In England, it's not a well-known sport.
Well, how did you get into it?
I was a netball player, and two girls on my netball team had listened to an announcement over the radio to go to a meeting about this slow pitch game, and they went, and then they asked individuals if they'd like to come along and have a go.
Do you have any kind of background in softball? Do you know the history of softball or fast pitch in England? Is it connected to rounders or cricket or anything like that?
The English, the softball players that know the game hate it being compared to rounders. Like, softball is so much more exciting than round. Rounders is a boring game.
Have there been good crowds at the games?
Yeah, massive crowds. It's brilliant. The people are excellent. The hospitality has been second to none.
The cars even stop for you on the road.
We've been treated like queens.
This happens all the time in international events where players defect to another country. Do you know if there are any players on your team that plan to defect to Canada, perhaps, for the softball future?
No defections. We're British through and through, and the team is relatively new, and we'd like to come back in 4 years' time when the team has been together for a while. No defections.
No defections. Solid team from Great Britain. Do you guys have any traditions or superstitions that you practice before you go on field? I mean, do you have a team chant or a team cheer or something? Strike zone. Oh, that was in the strike zone. That was there. Come on now, Mel. Come on, Mel. Put it in here. Don't go spitting on that now, Mel.
Here we go now, Mel. Stay down. Come on, come on. Too low. Oh, come on, too low, too low. Strike. Just a second. Come on, come on. Let me have a look at it here. Come on, Mel. Up where I can see it. Up where I can see it. Oh, hey, hey. Is she allowed to say stuff like that to me while I'm in the batter's box? What? Isn't there a rule against that? I'd have a little wood bat. Make sure she's far enough away. I think she's moving in every time she pitches. She's getting closer. Come on now, Mel. Oh. That's only two.
So, I went 0 for 6. I'm not taking anything away from the squad from Great Britain, but I wasn't focused. I didn't have time to warm up or do any of my stretching exercises. I think I jammed something on my first big cut. If I hadn't run out of breath, I'm sure I would have beaten out the bunt. And I'm sure that they took something away from the experience. A few tips on batting stance, the moth knuckler, that's a tricky pitch known around the media league as the phantom, and the knowledge that when the eyesight begins to fail and the swing slows down, there's always broadcasting as a career. One word describes this gutsy team. Brilliant, yeah?
You're listening to the Great Eastern on BCAM.
Still got my high school jacket. Still got my high school ring. Tucked in the corner of my wallet is a tattered photo of a king. Yet I have the pride. Staring back at silent eyes, I saw a star burn out last night. Saw the crier's paradise. Yes, I did. I got scumbling blind ambition, couple of cards I haven't played. I got a gambler's intuition, I know when I stay too late. Yet I have to cry, staring back at silent eyes. Where do gamblers go to die? They go to crier's paradise. When that man from Memphis left us, we'd all had to turn our backs. He was a hardcore hotel exile. That's the golden moment facts. And the whole world grieved. I saw the whole thing on TV. Now I ask the eternal question, does the darkness grant release? Yet I have to cry as the motorcade goes by, taking a sad lonely boy off the crier's paradise. I got demons founded on me. I got a ghost from stair to show. I got bad mistakes to haunt me till I'm just a ghost myself. Yet I have corner of my wallet is a tattered photo of me. Yet I have to cry, staring back at silent eyes. I saw a star burn out last night, saw the crier's paradise. Yes, I have to cry, staring back at silent eyes. Must my heart be crucified to get in a crier's paradise. Oh,
extraordinary event here at scenic Kitty Vitty Lake. The Royal St. John's Regatta Committee has called an unscheduled press conference. This is totally unprecedented. There's much speculation going around Lakeside at the moment, something about hot dogs or French fries gone bad, tainted fat. We don't have any details right now. Let's hope it's not a reprise of the 82 bad fat scandal when dozens were lost. Oh, here's the honorary vice chairperson of the St. John's Royal Regatta Committee, Sir Peyton Osborne III. He's approaching the press scrum right now, and he's going to speak to the press. The next voice you'll hear will be Sir Peyton Osborne's voice.
We have an announcement from the committee. It is with great regret that I announce the disqualification of the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland crew from this year's media race. Preliminary test results indicate the presence in urine samples taken from the BCN crew prior to the race of sorbitolinol, an anabolic steroid. Now, it hasn't been determined whether the BCN will be suspended from future competition. That's to be decided at a future date by a disciplinary board, which will meet, chaired by myself. In the meantime, the crew from the CBC remains the winner of the media race. That's in an official course record time of 7 minutes. That's the committee statement. We will take some questions now.
If these substances are supposed to be performance enhancing, how do you explain the BCN's dismal performance?
Now, Joe, have you seen these guys?
There are already allegations that the BCN and the CBC urine samples have been switched.
Look, there's been talk of that. It is utter nonsense. Okay?
Didn't the CBC quash a story linking tobacco for a better tomorrow to retraining dummy funds to Regatta Committee member J. Richard Kandow's Kandow Corp? Mm-hmm.
Look, I can't answer any of that. You're going to have to ask Mr. Kandow. The CBC crew, I understand that right now they've boarded a flight for Toronto some time ago. A new training course up there. There's a regatta at Lake Ontario or something. Look, from our standpoint, there's nothing suspicious. I'm afraid the bottom line, as much as it pains me to say it, the BCN is the guilty party here. Okay, I've been through those samples myself. There's no way around it. I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Well, as you have heard, an infamous day in the history of the BCN, the Regatta, and St. John's. I just can't accept that our boys from the BCN would knowingly take steroids. And there's never been any sign whatsoever in the building. I mean, they're always so sedentary, so hard to motivate. But there you have it. BCN not only fails to win the media race for the 44th straight regatta, but it fails the urine test as well. Absolutely shocking. Oh, here comes the man at the center of the controversy now, J. Richard Kenna. Richard.
I'm a patsy ball.
Oh, no, we're not going to get anything out of Richard. Not today.
BCN, the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland. All Newfoundland radio.
It's been 3 days since the regatta, and I still can't get over the doping scandal. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. The Chinese have a way with English, don't they? And so do the Americans, because it's the Yanks who say it's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And this week I saw the game played at its lowest and meanest and dirtiest. Mid-teen temperatures on a sunny lake with a steady nor'easter stirring ripples, vats of boiling water tossing wieners gaily into the air, cotton candy cones cover the course, lost children wail, tipsy pondside partygoers pale, larcenous youths roam the fairground, raffle wheels rattle, and the air is thick with competition of all kinds. With the pride of the corporation riding on their shoulders, our crew perhaps went a little too far. It's understandable. I mean, I know what they were trying to do, but regrettably, they let the goal fog their sensibilities. But it was only one race in a whole day of races. The success of the 168th running of the Royal St. John's Regatta can be considered a kind of victory in a kind of game. The game of life, here in Newfoundland. And while we may not win the game, we sure know how to play it.
That's it for another wonderful week in Newfoundland. Please be in touch. We love hearing from you. Your questions, your answers, and your comments, and the postcards, they're delightful.
Our address is the Great Eastern, 342 Duckworth Street, St. John's, Newfoundland. And the postal code is A1C1H5. If you'd like to phone, our number is area code 709-576-5389. We have a fax machine now, but we haven't figured out how to work it yet. Next week, I promise. Want to say hello to Mark McKenzie in Chilliwack and Rita Richards in Kingston? Thanks for calling. Tom Codner is the man here at the BCN who climbs the transmitter tower with a rubber-handled screwdriver. And Ish Lundrigan is the director of radio. My name is Paul Moth. Join the Broadcasting Corporation of Newfoundland again next week here on the CBC for the Great Eastern, Newfoundland's cultural magazine.